Welcome to CME on ReachMD. This activity, titled The New MS Treatment Landscape, Personalized Management Strategies, is provided by Topec Global and the Global Neurology Academy and supported by an independent medical educational grant from Merck KGaA, Darmstadt, Germany. Prior to beginning the activity, please be sure to review the faculty and commercial support disclosure statements, as well as the learning objectives. Your host is Dr. Matt Bernholtz. Dr. Bernholtz will speak with Professor Andrew Chan of Bern University Hospital in Bern, Switzerland. Professor Tobias Durfus of University Clinic, Basel, in Basel, Switzerland. Here's Dr. Matt Bernholtz.
Coming to you from Baveno, Italy, for McCann Complete Medical's special meeting on multiple sclerosis, this is CME on ReachMD. I'm Dr. Matt Bernholtz. And joining me today to talk about the evolving treatment landscape and ushering in of personalized medicine for MS are Doctors Andrew Chan and Tobias Durfus. Welcome to you both, doctors.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dr. Chan, let me start with you. Maybe before we look forward, as this entire piece is devoted to, we can take a quick look back, because we have an evolved understanding of MS that has a story behind it. It helped us open doors to new treatment approaches. But how has that evolved understanding, or the changing understanding over time, given us that opportunity?
It's a very interesting question, a very interesting story also, because at least to my understanding, the initial progress that was made was not really, you know, like a clear hypothesis and then you follow it up and then you have a translational success or something, but it came really the other way around. So the story with interferon beta or also glatiramer acetate really evolved from a different point, one has to say. So interferon beta was introduced into the clinical development program once it was understood that interferon gamma, so the natural counterpart, just failed. So it's just not, you know, like a hypothesis-driven something, but it's just like trial and error. And similarly, glatiramer acetate. Still, you know, then we had some major progress with also very good study designs, new techniques like MRI really helped us to make better studies. And then we came up with some newer histopathological data that indicated that we have quite early on during the disease axonal damage, which is potentially irreversible in MS. So in the early 2000s, we started with the paradigm of very early treatment of MS. And then, you know, a couple of years later, we came up with even potentially more efficacious but also more aggressive substances such as natalizumab, which was one of the first agents in that sort of category. And this is really where we are now. So we have a plethora of newer treatment modalities which sort of cover different phenotypes and different needs of the patients. We have certain understanding of the potential modes of action, but then there are some downsides in terms of unanticipated adverse drug reactions.
Excellent. So Dr. Durfus, with that context in mind, I'm interested in getting your thoughts on this looking back, but also to help take us forward to what some of the novel therapies are both in Europe and the U.S. Maybe you can walk us through that.
So I think these therapies also provided some answers or some insight into the pathogenesis of MS. And for example, it was long thought that MS and rheumatoid arthritis, they are related diseases. They have common immunological background, and therefore TNF blockade was also tried in multiple sclerosis. But in the end, it increased the disease activity, so it had an opposite effect in multiple sclerosis. Another example is B-cell depletion. B-cell depletion works very good. And it was thought that mainly the plasma cells should be targeted, because they produce the antibodies, and the idea was the autoantibodies are important in MS. So not only a CD20 depleting antibody was used, because this doesn't deplete the plasma cells. Another treatment was tried. This is called atacicept, and that's an also biological that blocks survival factor of B cells. And the difference to a CD20 depleting therapy is that with this treatment you also get the plasma cells depleted and you get a reduction in immunoglobulins. But this study showed that MS also gets worse if you give this treatment. So it's, again, an opposite effect. And I think this highlights how complicated this immune system is. And you can target B cells, but you have to target the right B cells. And maybe the plasma cells are regulatory B cells.
So with that in mind, it brings up the question of trying to get the right medication or the right therapy to the right patient at the right time. Very complex maneuver. What are the overall factors that you look at to try to hone in on making more personalized decisions?
So certainly it's like the sort of normal medical approach, you know, like you have a certain disease phenotype, you have a certain level of activity, you have some prognostic factors like age, we have paraclinical markers such as MRI activity. So that really helps you a bit. Luckily, we have now almost a dozen substances approved. So obviously other factors also play a role. And then we come down to issues of, for example, patient-related aspects, adherence, monitoring burden for the patient.
If you're just joining us, this is CME on ReachMD. I'm Dr. Matt Bernholtz. Joining me to discuss recent innovations in our treatment landscape, as well as personalized medicine approaches for MS, are Professors Andrew Chan and Tobias Durfus. In the absence of reliable biomarkers, is the ability to start targeting treatments that with a measure of confidence that the side effects will be minimal for that particular patient and the benefit will be highest. It's not necessarily compromised, but does it make it a little bit more tenuous in terms of being able to predict how a patient will react to one medication or therapy versus another?
Well, you know, when it comes to benefit risks, at least for the risk, we do have some single markers which may aid in treatment selection there. Well, the way you phrase the question is sort of leading into one direction. I rather see it from a different side, you know, because it comes back to an issue where really the communication with the patient, the mutual trust, the understanding of the patient's needs are equally important, sometimes even more important. And that's really back to being a physician, isn't it? So, you know, yes, we have the choice. For me, it's a luxury. I'm very happy that, you know, I can choose among broad therapeutic armamentarium. And it really helps me to try to include really also the patient needs in terms of trying to act as a doctor.
So I completely agree. I think we neurologists are always very humble and we say we cannot predict the future. Of course, we cannot predict it. But I agree that our gut feeling is not as bad as we maybe think. I mean, we integrate a lot of information. We look at how strong was the relapse, how was the recovery after steroid pulse, where are the lesions on the MRI located, how do they look like. So these different informations are integrated and they influence our treatment decisions.
That brings up a thought here, because what I'm gathering from the two of you is that even the very concept of NEDA, or no evidence of disease activity, is highly variable to how the patient defines that with you as the clinician. Maybe the two of you can remark on that a little bit as that ushers or helps us segue into the concept of personalizing medicine.
You raise a very important point. So current NEDA definitions, meaning we don't have relapses, we just don't have disability progression, and we don't have new MRI activity, is certainly one step forward, but we're not there yet. So is it plausible that a new lesion counts as much as a relapse, as a severe relapse? Probably not. And then, you know, there are other domains. Right now, we only focus on several MRI lesions. We just leave out the assessment of spinal cord MRI. We leave out the impact of brain atrophy. We leave out the impact, for example, neurocognitive or neuropsychological dysfunction, fatigue, employment. And these are all very old studies also that all the parameters that we are focusing on as physicians may not be the parameters which are really relevant to the patient, or at least, you know, which are not the parameters which are important for the patients in terms of quality of life and daily activities and living.
Dr. Durfus, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, the concept of NEDA, I think, you have to see it in the context of where the patient is with regard to his disease course and his previous treatments. It's quite easy if you have a patient on an interferon or Copaxone and it's an early stage patient that has continuous disease activity, then you escalate them. It gets harder once you are in these high efficacy treatments and you get an MRI lesion, would this then be enough to escalate to something else, or is there something left? Or what about the side effects? Is it really well balanced? And I think this will be especially a problem when we come with these new therapies for progressive MS, especially the B-cell depleting therapies. And they have been registered in Switzerland and also in the EU. The label in Switzerland is quite open, so we can treat everyone with primary progressive MS without any limits. So no age limit, no EDSS, no disability limit. And I think that might be a problem in the end. I think the efficacy of the drug is shown in a clinical trial, so I think I believe in this. But of course, there are probably long-term risks, and you really have to think if it makes sense to start this treatment in every patient. And there are data from subgroup analysis that show that younger patients respond better. And of course, if your disability level is lower, you probably also have a better chance of responding to this treatment. And this we have to also always incorporate in our treatment decisions. And I think the European label in this respect is better, because it takes into account also the disability level of the patient and the age of the patient.
You know, we can't really say the term personalized medicine without moving on certain concepts that become almost synonymous with it. I mean, the ideas of pharmacogenomics, the idea of having unique combination therapies to every patient that are tailor-made so that the patient will have the least risk of developing, let's say, malignancies or other characteristic severe side effects that can emerge with some of these treatments. Are we there yet, as in practice, realistically? Is it down the road?
Well, again, you're touching upon a difficult issue. It's, you know, when you want to develop biomarkers, maybe even surrogate markers, especially on a pharmacogenomic background, and for me, there's three stages. Two stages of development, and then, you know, in the end, the third stage, you come up with a profile from blood, from CSF, from whatever body fluid or tissue that informs you on treatment selection. However, of course, we're not there yet. I think we are beyond the first step, that we have identified several potential molecular markers. To name a few, most recently highly discussed was a blood marker. This is not a pharmacogenomic marker, but a blood protein that would be neurofilaments, which could be interesting. Then again, you know, the second step after this biomarker identification is really the validation. Is it true in independent cohorts? Is it true for different phenotypes? Would it hold up for treatment monitoring? These are the aspects. And the majority of identified biomarkers really fail during that stage, one has to say.
Well, with that plethora of insights, I very much want to thank my guests, Dr. Andrew Chan and Dr. Tobias Durfus, for helping to look back and look forward. As Dr. Chan said, two steps forward, one step back, but at least we are moving forward in the field. Doctors, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
This has been CME on ReachMD. The preceding activity was brought to you by Topec Global. To receive your free CME credit or to download this activity, please visit reachmd.com/GNA.